I'm going to talk about this passage today. So we've been reading in Mark chapter 5 today, and we're in the middle of the 100-day Bible reading challenge together. And we were doing that also at the 30-hour famine leading up to this. And what's interesting about this passage is following the same pattern that we're seeing with Jesus from the beginning. Because, you know, one of the things you can understand is in the Gospel of John, Jesus says, or John is writing, and he says, the light has come into the world, but the darkness has not understood it yet. The darkness doesn't understand the light. And who is the light? The light is Jesus. And the whole idea is the idea that nobody's understanding Jesus. Everybody's surprised about what Jesus is doing. Because story after story here, as you've been reading at the beginning of Mark, he's healing the diseased, he's casting out demons, and nobody knows what to do about Jesus. Right before this, at the end of chapter 4, we have the story where even the disciples don't know what to do about Jesus. Because they're in the boat, the storm comes, they find Jesus sleeping, they wake him up, Master, don't you care that we're going to perish? Don't you care that we're going to die? And then he stands up and says, peace, be still, the weather stops. Has anybody ever tried that? Children and youth, have you ever tried to stop the weather that you did not like? And did it work? Okay. Oh, one says, okay, we'll pray about it after the service. If it worked, I'm going to use you for some money then. But it's interesting, though, that's the extent of who Jesus is, that he can even control the weather. And so he stops the winds and the waves, and and he looks at the disciples and he says, where is your faith? And then the disciples don't know what to say other than to say, who is this guy? Even the wind and the waves obey him? Even they didn't understand who he was. So I ask you today, children and youth, as well as adults, who is Jesus to you? Because Jesus is just a word, it's just a name. It can mean a lot of different things. There are people who believe that Jesus never existed. They believe that the Jesus we worship in the Bible never existed. There are also people who believe that, yeah, Jesus existed, but he was just a good teacher, he was just a good prophet, he really wasn't the Son of God, he really wasn't the Messiah. When we get into this story, we have this amazing thing happening, guys, and I want all the children and youth to think about this. When we are looking at this story, first of all, as she read it or as you have been reading it, does anybody find anything interesting about this story? Children and youth, anybody? I can wait. That's fine. Yeah. Oh, there's one. Yes. The disciples thought what? Sorry? Oh, in the story of the storm? I mean, yes. Yeah, so in the story of the storm, the disciples thought that Jesus was going to let them die. Yes, correct. Anything interesting about this story that we're on today about the swine and the demon-possessed man? Yes, Everett. Yes, very good. So the man was unable to be contained. This was a man who was unable to be contained. He lived amongst the tombs. Now imagine living in this neighborhood of this guy, okay? Imagine being in the neighborhood of this guy that nobody can control this man. They chained him with shackles, and even that couldn't do it. Do you think anybody in this town was talking about this man? Yeah, I mean, now I'm sure children and youth probably don't necessarily get this, but this would be like what you would call beauty shop talk or barber shop talk, right? Come on, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah, you know that talk that takes place. I mean, you used to do hair, Brenda. You've done hair for years. You know what it's like. What is it about doing hair that causes people to talk? And people just start talking about this or they talk about that. I was at a barbershop years ago. They had the radio in there. They're listening to every single call. They knew exactly where the police were, what was happening. This happened over here. This happened over there. And they were just discussing everything that happened in town. I am certain that if we were in this man's town, this would be the talk of the town. Everybody would say, where is he anyway now? Have you seen him? Because I don't want my kids going out. I don't want my kids going out because where's he at now? Is he locked up yet? Because this guy, you know how horrible this guy is. This guy's he's demon-possessed. He's uncontrollable. This is like an animal, basically. And they can't control this guy. And so Jesus comes, and he redeems this man. He casts out the demon. And then what happens is he sends the demons where? Children and youth, where'd they go? Anybody? Yes. Yes. Right, but before that, where did he send them out in this passage? He sent them into swine. He sent them into swine. What is swine? Anybody, children and youth, define swine for me, please. And don't point to somebody. Just tell me swine. Just define for it, please. Just define me. Yes, in the back. Yes. Pigs. All right. Very good. Pigs. So, yes. So, it's pigs. Now, does anybody remember how many pigs? If you've been following along, he does say it. Close. 2,000. 2,000 pigs. Now, I hesitate in saying this, but I'm just curious. Has anybody here ever met a pig? Now, now you know what I mean, okay? A real one, okay? So you have met, right? You've met a pig, yes. Has anybody here ever met 2,000 pigs in one sitting? That's a lot of pigs, isn't it? That's a lot of swine. 2,000 swine. So 2,000 swine, these demons enter the swine. Then what happens after that? When the demons enter the swine, what happens? Anybody? Yes. They say it again. They fall into the sea and drown. They fall over and die. They're gone. And everybody is now frustrated because of what just happened. So now we have the herdsmen. When the herdsmen see this, the people that were in charge of the 2,000 pigs, they didn't like this. So they run to Jesus, and they find Jesus, and this demon-possessed, the one who was demon-possessed, kneeling at Jesus' feet. He was demon-possessed. Now he's kneeling at Jesus' feet. And as Mark points out, in his right mind, he's normal. They recognize him as, wait a minute, that's the demon-possessed guy. That's the guy we've talked about at the barbershop and the beauty shop. That's the guy everybody knows about. He's okay. He's like us now. He's normal. Something changed. So what that meant was, what did it mean? It meant that, wow. Well, number one, we don't have to talk about him anymore. Number two, we don't get to talk about him anymore. So something's different. Something's changed. This guy's life has been changed. But what that means is we're safe. Our whole town is safe now. Our prayers have been answered. Right? Now, over the last few years, safety has been a big issue, hasn't it? In our culture, the whole pandemic, everything else, it's been all about safety. And we're asked all the time, do you feel safe? And we're trying our best to make people feel safe. And safety is a big issue. It's a big concern for all of us. Jesus just solved it. This is as if Jesus would show up, let's just say right now today, or even in the midst of the pandemic, but actually when COVID was active, but right now especially, if Jesus would show up and he would just say, no more COVID, it's done. And he just wipes out COVID. COVID doesn't exist. A lot of us would say, thank you. Right? I hope you would. I don't think anybody here wants COVID, right? I don't think anybody here wants the whole issue of safety to continue because it's really caused a lot of issues. It's really caused a lot of problems. But if Jesus would just take that away, we would just say, oh my goodness, thank you, Jesus. Now we can do what? Now we can go back like it's 2019. That should be a song, right? Yes, we're going to rock it like it's 2019, right? Yeah, living like it's 2019, going back in time when what? What did we talk about? Things were normal, right? And how many times have we said, well, when things get back to normal. And then, of course, we have the whole idea, what can anybody even define normal? It doesn't make any sense. But right here, the whole town was able to say, now we can go back to 2019. Now we can be normal. There is no issue anymore. We don't have to be concerned. This man is redeemed. His life is now changed. We don't have to worry about our kids going out at night anymore. He can't, even if he talks to them, it's no big deal because he's not demon-possessed anymore. He's a complete different person, and this man has been redeemed, and his whole life has changed. But instead, the herdsmen didn't like this. Instead, do you know what they did, children and youth? She read it earlier. Anybody? What was their response to this whole thing that happened? Oh, wait. Children and youth, I'm sure you can come up with it. Some of you are already on your devices. I can see it. Yes. They asked him to leave. Very good. Is anybody else here sitting here going, why? You just saved our whole town. You just saved our whole community. We don't want you to get out, Jesus. We don't like you. There's a lot of speculation of why this happened. There's a lot of reasons, and there's a lot of theologians and commentators who've talked about why it happened, that they thought the herdsman lost money, so the herdsman doesn't like the fact they lost money, which could be part of it. But actually, it just seems like the same reason everybody was having issues with Jesus up till now, the herdsmen were now having issues with Jesus, because the problem is Jesus is so powerful. Jesus is so powerful that he goes beyond what they can control, and they don't want to deal with that. And so they say, Jesus, get out. Because if he has that much power that he can cast out that demon and cleanse this man, who knows what this man's going to do to us, and who knows what's going to happen. So Jesus, just get out. Isn't it amazing how they kicked him out? When you think about the whole idea that Jesus was kicked out, he said, they came to him and they said, Jesus, leave. And he left. That's one thing you find out about Jesus. That's one thing you find out about him, is that he's not going to, let's just say he's in your life, right? Jesus is in your life and you say, you know what, Jesus, I don't want you in my life anymore. He's not going to like it. He's going to hope you change your mind. But he's not going to say, no, I'm staying whether you like it or not. No, he's not going to do that. He'll get in his boat and say, okay, and go away. So I want you to look at one of the verses here. If we go to the next slide, please. Verse 6, seeing Jesus from a distance, he ran up and bowed down before him. Let's go to the next slide. And shouting with a loud voice, he said, what business do we have with each other, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God, do not torment me. Now, remember, children and youth, who's talking now? Yes. Say it again. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Legion, yes. He called them legion because there were more than one. The legion of demons are talking through the man is what's happening here. They're talking because they're using the man because the man is demon-possessed. And listen to how they're talking to him. What business do we have with each other, Jesus, Son of the Most High? I implore you by God, do not torment me. For he had been saying to him, come out of the man, you unclean spirit. Verse 9, and he was asking him, what is your name? And he said to him, my name is Legion, for we are many. And he began to implore him earnestly. Implore means beg. So this is the demon begging Jesus, do not send us out of the country. Skips to the next slide. Now there was a large herd of swine feeding nearby on the mountain. The demons begged him again, saying, send us into the swine so that we may enter them. Jesus gave them permission. So a lot of begging going on here. Anybody here ever begged? Children and youth especially, you ever begged? You ever found yourself begging? Because I heard some begging happening this weekend. Just here and there. I mean, some was stronger than other, but I heard some begging of... Especially, you know, parents, are you used to this whole thing of why? You know, when you're asked if they can do something and you say no and they say, why? Right? Anybody ever hear that as a parent? You've never heard that, or you have, or yeah? Yes, all the time. Yes. But why? And then even when you give the explanation, but this, but I did it before, but this, but that, but this. I heard that all weekend. All weekend. And I remember I learned about this because I'm a parent myself, but even before I was a parent, I learned about this. And I'm sorry, I'm going to have to just say this. When I was a youth pastor, we had a boy in the youth group. He was in seventh grade, and this kid, he was the one, he just whined about everything. I mean, every single thing. You ever had that, Brenda? Yeah, you ever had that, Jen? You ever had that? No, never. Just whined about everything. And it was always the old mantra, and all of you have heard this before. It's not fair. Anybody ever heard that before? I heard that all the time. It's not fair. It's not fair. It's not fair. Finally, we were having a sleepover similar to the 30-hour famine. I was in charge of him, and he started that right before he went to bed, and I was getting tired, and I guess my holiness was maybe being challenged to a certain degree, and which happens. And I simply said, Joey, life isn't fair. Get over it. And the whole place just erupted in laughter, and the kid never whined again. So maybe that's the answer. Life isn't fair. Get over it, okay? But there's a lot of whys, right? There's a lot of, but why? But why this? But why that? But I want to show you something here today. This is going to answer all of your questions about everything. If you put up the slide with the one word. There you go. There's your answer. Anybody know what that is? Okay, I'll tell you how to pronounce it. It's Akerkomai. Akerkomai. Say that with me, please. Akerkomai. Okay? Now, what's interesting about this, in the Greek text here, the X, the actual pronunciation, usually when our English we do it as K, but believe me, this is the one, this was fun in Greek class. It wasn't fun for the professor, I guess, but it was fun because you really have to get that guttural throat sound in there. So it's actually, akerkomai. That's really what it is. So children, can you do that with me, please? One, two, three. Akerkomai. Just do that. Just do that part. That's how you pronounce the letter. Do it. I knew you guys would enjoy that one. Yes. That's how you do it, right? That's how you pronounce it. Akerkomai. Now, who can tell me what this means? Any guesses? I knew you'd guess. Go ahead. It means something. All right. Give the guy a prize. All right. Anybody else? Yes, Andrew. It means to cry? No, that's a good guess, though. No? Anybody else? From what we're talking about at all, anybody want to guess? It's not that easy. What's that? Why? Why? You're asking the question why? Yeah. Oh, you're giving the definition why. Yeah, yeah. So you're saying this means why. Okay, does it mean why? You don't know. Oh, didn't you graduate college? You graduated college. No, okay. Yes, Everett, yes. Good guess, very good guess in light of what's going on in this passage, but sorry, not correct, yes. Ooh, say it again. To get out of. Oh, are you looking at a device? Are you looking? Oh, wow, $64 million, give them to her. She just deserves it. Now, because technically it does mean, this means get out. Did you cheat, did you? No, you're whispering to someone. Oh, you helped her. Okay, who do I give the prize money to then? Yeah, both of you, you're going to split it? All right, so yeah, akerkomai, yes, it's the idea of get out, okay? Now, the form of the verb changes when you talk about the mood that it's in the Greek tense, and the mood that it's in is actually the imperative mood. Anybody here familiar with the imperative mood? What imperative means? Yes. It's a command. Boy, we got to kill the whole church's budget now. I got three people I got to pay. Okay. It's a command. Now, you guys know what a command is, right? Children and youth, do you know what a command is? Well, I'll tell you what a command is. When your parent tells you to do something, period. That's a command, right? It is not an option. It is not negotiable. When they say, clean up your room, guess what? That's a command. Nobody's asking you. They're telling you. It's a command, right? Okay, so this is in the form of a command. So I thought about this, and any siblings here ever have any issue with a certain room of the house that might be occupied by another sibling and you want them to get out? Anybody ever experienced that? Right? Well, the next time that happens, all you have to do is just scream, Akarkomai! Get out! Akarkomai! Get out! It's my turn! Akarkomai! Get out! So, when Jesus goes to this man who's demon-possessed, this man is demon-possessed. His whole life is over, completely controlled by demons. Nobody wants this man around. The demons come up, and they start to beg him. And they say, Jesus, what business do you have to do with us? Leave us alone. And then they start to beg him. And they say, Jesus, please don't send us here or here. Please, and if you're going to send us, Jesus, could you please send us in the swine? And Jesus gives them permission. But Jesus looked at the demons and said, get out. And this is a command. There was no question about whether they were going to get out of this man or not. This was a command. Get out. It's really not anything different than what's been happening with Jesus from the beginning as we've been reading through Mark, because in the beginning, what we've been reading through, Jesus has been healing diseases like it's nothing. Jesus is casting out demons like it's nothing. Jesus is even controlling the weather, and now he's just telling this demon, get out. Which means Jesus is in charge. Nobody can compete with Jesus. Everything has been given, all the power and authority has been given over to him, where he can look at anything at any time and say, you're not doing that. Go. It's him. And what Mark's purpose is in writing this gospel is over and over, he's been explaining to everybody who Jesus is. He's explaining who this man is. He's not just a good teacher. He's not just a prophet. He, in fact, is the Messiah. He, in fact, is the Son of God. And if that's true, then all of us should look at Jesus and all of us should say, I want to know you. Because when the man left, when Jesus left, later on in the story, you'll read about it. When the man left, he comes to Jesus and he says, Jesus, I want to go with you. I mean, sorry, when Jesus left, the man says to Jesus, I want to go with you. Because obviously, why not? He just changed my life. And Jesus said, no, I want you to stay and tell everybody about me. This man's life was completely changed in one moment simply because of Jesus in that moment, to the point that he was just like, I want to cling to you. And Jesus said, no, you stay here and talk about me. And he had no problem talking about this Jesus. He wasn't embarrassed to talk about him. He wasn't ashamed of him. He wasn't saying, I'm not going to talk about him. No, it was like, Jesus just changed my life, so I'm going to talk about him. And I want to ask you, children and youth, has Jesus changed your life? Because the reason I'm asking that is this, is that it's very important for us to understand that all of us need to come to a place in our lives, regardless of our age, regardless of where we're at, regardless of our background, all of us need to come to a place in our lives where we realize that Jesus is Lord. Because if we haven't come to that place, then even using his name, even saying Christian, doesn't make any sense, because the whole idea of serving Jesus is the idea that Jesus is Lord. And you heard this before, but there's a different slant I want to give to this tonight. You've heard my testimony before of how I got saved. You know that I grew up in the church. And I was at every service. Everything was great. And then it was in my teenage years, I was at a concert. And that was when I decided I'm going to be serious about my life with Christ. And I went forward that night. I never liked altar calls before, but that night I went forward and I accepted Christ. And when I stood up to accept Christ and started to follow, when they gave the call for the altar call, halfway down I was saying to myself, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? You don't do this. Because at our church, we always had altar calls, and my family would always bring me down, and my mom would be crying, and it would probably always be embarrassing. And I always hated the idea of praying with everybody down front. I mean, I tried to just hide in the foyer every time I got to that point, and I didn't want anybody to do that with me. But in 1987, I stood there, and I remember when they gave that altar call, I stood up, and I lost control of everything, and I just walked down, and I thought, what am I doing? And it was like, this is real. God was really calling me that night, because if anybody was going to come forward, that wasn't going to come forward, it was me, because I despised those things. And that night, my life was completely changed. And that night, I went down. And I remember they had me write in the flyleaf of the Bible. They gave me a Bible, and they had me write down on this date, July 11th, 1987, Chad Hoge gives his heart to Christ. That was a Christian heavy metal concert that I was at, because that's what I was into. And I had the opportunity here recently. I actually was able, now the lead singer has passed away and all the members went different areas, different directions, but I had the opportunity recently to talk to the bass player who was on that stage that night. And he told me, he said, you don't know how many other people share that same story that you just shared, not just about our other concerts, but especially that particular night, that God must have been doing something. So after I had the chance to talk to the man that was involved in me getting saved, I heard about it, but I wasn't sure, but I heard that this was on YouTube. So I did some searches late at night. Everybody else, nobody else was there. I was there by myself, and I was able to re-watch the whole concert. Someone posted it on YouTube, and I was actually able to hear the message again of when I got saved. And I was able to see the crowd go forward to accept Christ. I could almost pick myself out. I'm not much of a crier, folks, but I'm going to tell you, that night when I watched that video, I couldn't control it. I couldn't keep it in, because all of a sudden the memory just came back that was the night. That was the night when I said, I'm for Jesus for the rest of my life, and I don't care about anything else. And the issue is this, that doesn't make you perfect. I'm not perfect. The people in the front row will be happy to tell you that I'm not perfect. In fact, they have already told you that. I always tell them, you know, please stop. You don't need to do that. I haven't been perfect. I've made mistakes. But if there's one thing for certain, I have never once regretted going forward that night. I have not once said, I'm going to turn my back on this Jesus that saved me that night. My life was completely changed on that night. And the reason I'm standing here today, the reason I'm even in ministry, the reason that I'm a minister, the reason that I'm even at New Hope is all because of that night. Because that night, what happened was, when I realized He's Lord and I'm not, it was all of a sudden, this isn't my life anymore, God, this is yours. And so from then on, every decision going forward was always up to Him. Not what I want, it's what you want. If I have to sacrifice this, I sacrifice this. I have to give this up. Every place I've gone has always just been, okay, God, wherever you want to go. God, are you sure? And He's never asked me for my opinion. He's never even discussed it with me. And Miranda can tell you, in both of our lives, there has been so many times, it's just like God said, nope, this is where I want you. Just like a crane picking you up. Nope, right here. Ah, no, I don't want to come. Yeah, boom. You do that well. Can you do it again? But what I'm saying this morning is this. I believe this morning might be your night. Jesus might be talking to you right now the same way that he talked to me all those years ago, saying, you need to make your life with me serious. You need to get serious about your life with me. You need to commit your life to me. You need to recognize that I'm Lord. Enough playing games. You've heard me say it before, but the one statement that he said when he was preaching that night before he opened the altars for everybody, the one statement he said that stuck with me, that has stayed with me ever since then, he said, are you going to church and you're with Jesus on Sunday, but when you walk out of that door, are you leaving Jesus there? That's exactly what I had been doing. Because when I came home and I told my parents and told everybody else, hey, I got saved, they didn't even believe it because they thought I already was. Because I knew how to act, knew how to do the right things, knew how to do. But it was that night that my whole life was completely changed. And I said, I'm going to serve you, and it doesn't matter where you lead me, what happens. My life is now in your hands because you are Lord. Let's bow our heads today. Lord Jesus, we are so grateful tonight for how you're speaking to us. And God, I just, in this moment, before music begins to play, before we do any singing or anything, in this moment, Jesus, I just ask that you would speak to each of us exactly what it is that we need to hear. And right now, I just want to ask everybody in this place, the same way they did it with me that night, I just want to ask you if you would just repeat this prayer after me. And you may even say, but I'm already saved. Well, that's fine. Could you just repeat it just to support those who are here that may not be? But if you could just repeat this after me, could you just say, dear Jesus, I thank you for dying for my sins. And I come to you today a sinner. And I ask you to forgive me. And I ask you that we could begin a new life together. Tonight, I commit my heart and life to you. And from here forward, I will be whatever you want me to be. And I ask all these things in your name. The name of Jesus. Amen. If heads could just stay bowed for a moment. And again, before we have any music or anything, this is for everybody right now in this moment. If you're on the worship team, if you're on the platform, it doesn't matter to me at all. We can sing in a few minutes. But right now, if you prayed that prayer for the first time, or even if it's the second time, or even if it's the 500th time, if it's the time that you say, you know what, this time I really meant it, I want to ask you to come forward and kneel here, and we'll be here to pray with you. Right now, anybody who prayed that at all, and it doesn't matter, children or youth or adult, anybody that wants to be prayed with, just to affirm the idea that this is the decision that you're making, I just want to say you can come forward right now and we'll be here to pray with you.